With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Artificial intelligence, the brave new world of the 21st century, and I welcome Rachel Lobasky, chief data scientist at Flux, which is a private company, startup, helps organizations do responsible AI. That's me. I need responsible AI because my experience is hands-on, but a marvel of new language that needs to be understood to see where we're going. What I also know about AI is that it's in the hands of extremely powerful and well-to-do men and women. And that means that it's always suspect of being in the hands of the rich and famous. You understand how class warfare works. Well, Rachel's here to help us understand all of the technical language that is going into producing right now revenue, because it's actually generating a lot of cash. Rachel, congratulations. Writing for Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute. That's the University of Texas at Austin. You're writing about what we know to be the brave new world of AI, Silicon Valley. I want to establish these different companies. There are many of them are well-financed, and the investor class shows up whenever it's available. Are these recognizable figures, or are these new people entirely to your business? Good evening to you, Rachel.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on here. It's a real pleasure to join you. I think a lot of these people come from the tech world. The companies that own the LLMs right now are obviously very large companies. They have to be well-financed because large language models cost a large amount of money. They cost a lot of money to train. It cost a lot of money to acquire all the data. And so right now, it very much is large companies that are controlling it.
Right. And to call them robber barons is romantic and inappropriate right now because we're in the discovery phase. Let's do some definitions first before we plunge into the contest of who are they and the contest of do they need to be regulated? That would be the governmental question asked around the world, not just in the U.S. First of all, let's use the LLM. What is an LLM? How should we think of it?
Yeah, so that's the large language model. I think for a lot of people, it's become synonymous with AI. It's not all of AI. A lot of AI is doing things like predicting who's going to get a mortgage or diagnosing diseases. But these are the things that I think most people are seeing as ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, where you type in a question, you get back an answer, or you generate images, things of that sort.
The large language model is depending upon the training of the large language model. What does that entail? How do you create a large language model? And is that the cost? Is that the overhead?
So there's two pieces. There is the training step of this, right, which is creating the large language model. This only happens periodically, and it's extremely expensive, hundreds of millions of dollars. Essentially, the reason that these work so well, the large part of the large language model, is that they're gathering internet scale data, sometimes multimodal, right? So not just text, but also videos, images, things of that sort. And obviously, it costs a huge amount of money to gather that data, to store it, to process it, and then to train the algorithm. So the training process is essentially looking at this huge corpus of data and intuitively looking at how often things co-occur. I can get more into that in detail if you'd like, but that costs a lot of money because it's just a huge amount of data. And then the second piece of this is what we call inference. And that's what happens every single time you go and use it. Every time you ask it a question or you ask it to generate an image, that costs much less money to do it just once. However, obviously, people are doing it millions and billions of times. So the overall cost of the inference actually dominates the cost of the training, even though inference itself is relatively inexpensive.
I want to say the large language model has technology, hardware and software, that generates it, and that's also expensive. Those are the data centers, and those are what we've now come to understand, chips, microchips, high-end microchips. A few companies are mentioned all the time because they create the chip that the AI depends upon, but that's startup costs. Now we come to the part that most affects all of us, which is, who's in control? Is anyone in control? What is an open language model? What is an open model? How should we think of that, Rachel?
Yeah, so there's these two pieces, right? So the training is extremely expensive. The inference, as I said, is less expensive to actually use it. So what a bunch of companies are doing is releasing the results of the training. So you're not getting the code to do the training. You're just getting what came out of it. And that is being released. Some of them are by big companies. So, for example, Meta, which is, you know, Facebook and Instagram, has released one called Llama. Mistral has one called AI. A few months ago, there was one out of China. DeepSeek released one called R2. Google has one called Gemma. A whole bunch of these where what they call the weights are released, the results of the training. And anyone can use it, right? They can't reproduce the steps to get there, but they can use it. And so these are, once you have it, once you have the weights, you can run it wherever you would like. Obviously, what you have is a static version of it. So if something goes and retrains it, right, if the big company goes and retrains it, you don't necessarily have that version. But you can use it wherever you'd like. It's yours.
All right. So what we have here is a product that costs a lot of money to create and being released to the general public at that point in time, not indefinitely. You don't get to refresh it. And you make a particular very good case that this is capitalism at work, that these competing powers, you mentioned Meta, but there's Microsoft, there's Google itself, the important thing, there's Apple, there are other startups that I can't even name. There's so many clever companies coming online. They're all pricing as well, and that has immediately made the cost go lower and lower to the point that it could disappear. Is that right, Rachel, that we're looking at something that could go into nothing?
Not sure it will go all the way to nothing, but the trend is certainly going in that direction. And like, as I said in the piece, that tends to be how this works with technology. I actually took my 13-year-old to Detroit this past weekend, and we went to a bunch of factories. You know, the first Ford car took 18 hours to make and cost a huge amount of money that only a few people could afford it. Then we went to the factory, and every F-150 rolls off a line every 53 seconds, right? So my guess is that the LLMs will also move in the same direction. As you said earlier, the chips are extremely expensive, particularly the GPU chips, the graphical processing ones that used to be used more for things like video games. Those are very expensive, and there's only a couple companies that make them. But the cost, like every other chip, is falling extremely rapidly, as well as algorithms are getting more efficient. So you need less chips or less powerful chips to be able to train a model. So, I think this is the pattern that we've seen, and there's no reason to believe that it won't continue in this LLM world as well.
You use the term democratization for the large language models ongoing right now. What is Hugging Face?
Yeah, so Hugging Face is a registry. So they have what they call sort of a freemium model. There's a free piece to it, and they also make money in various ways. But they allow people to register these open models. There's 1.7 million of them listed there right now. Some of them are very good. Honestly, some of them are not. but they have things like leaderboards so they can compete against each other. And anyone can download from that and just use it. So it's not just that these models are available. It's that they're very easy to gather.
So what we have then is the beginnings of what you'd say is a feast of large language models. What is a small language model? You mentioned that in your essay.
Yeah. So the large language models are the ones that we talked about at the beginning that cost hundreds of millions of dollars to train. And those are huge generalist models. They have essentially ingested the internet. And those are good if you need something that, you know, sort of, you're going to ask the smartest person you know a question. You want the one that knows the very most, if you can only ask one. But what we're seeing is more of what we call these small language models coming out. They're specialists, right? Instead of asking the smartest person, they're asking your mechanic or your doctor or the person who knows trivia in a particular area. They cost exponentially less to train, and in many cases, they're actually better. And so we're also seeing a bunch of those. Those are also available on Hugging Face. They're, you know, less performant overall because they're not generalists, but they're, and specialist problems, they're actually much better.
So if I wanted to ask questions about the graveyards used by the Civil War regiments, there could be a small language model that focuses entirely on the Civil War or even on the Union Army in the Civil War. I'm just being theoretical. Would that be a small language model?
Yeah, absolutely. So you could imagine that if there, you know, you train it just on the relevant data plus things at the margins, politicians of the time, economic situation of the time, things of that sort. If you ask it a question about, you know, pretty much anything else, it's not going to do very well, but that's okay, right? You're using it in a specialist context. You can imagine these, you know, things like drug discovery or other areas, like all you need to know is the things that are relevant to the drug discovery. You don't need the giant model for that.
Well, then here we are at the edge of it becoming a global phenomenon, because is it only in English now? You write that it's moving beyond English. Has that already happened?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely moved beyond English. Obviously, it's ingesting the internet. So I'd say it works relatively proportional to the prevalence of different languages on the internet. But we've also found, my own family has experimented. We have native Russian speakers as well, asking certain questions in both English and in Russian and actually getting different answers, just typing it into the same model. In America, we believe that Marconi developed the radio. In Russia, there's someone else who I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember right now. And depending on whether you type the question in English or in Russian, you actually get different answers.
That's very helpful to understand, because what we're dealing with now is competing fundamentals, competing large language models. And we're going to move to what can go wrong and why. The word regulation. Rachel is helping me. Her essay is at Civitas Outlook for part of Civitas Institute. She is the chief data scientist at Flux, which is a startup company about AI.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learn to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.